You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 584.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes. Hello, Cornflake.
Hi. How are you, Kevin?
I'm good. We are rolling through the 80s, and we're up to 1984 this week. I think it's going really well this time, don't you?
I don't know if I'm the authority on anything that's going well these days, but I guess, yes, sure, it's going great.
Everything's great. And so here we are. Let's go. Going to try to keep it short, which has been the trend lately. Let's keep that going if we can, and let's jump into your National Whatever Day.
National Whatever Day!
Well, this one's a good one, I think. Turning 50 on July 23rd is actor who has a running joke with her character she plays on TV that she bit a kid once. We're talking about Katherine Hahn, as in Jen Barkley from Parks and Rec and Agatha Harkness from WandaVision.
Yeah, I know who that is. I know her. She's good. She's really good.
It was Agatha all along.
Yeah.
You ever hear, though, about how she got her start in show business?
I don't think so. It occurs to me I really don't think I know anything about her.
You're going to love this. She got her start on a local puppet show back on Saturday mornings.
You know, this sounds really familiar. I guess I did know this about her.
She was on a show called Hickory Hideout, which was hosted by puppet characters. One of them was a squirrel, Nutso Pea Squirrely or something like that. Yep. And the other one was Know It Owl. This just makes me so happy. Everyone should get their start. I wish I got my start on a puppet show, Kevin. That's where I went wrong in life.
Oh, we certainly approve of people working with puppets. We're very pro-puppet around here.
We so are. And of course, she's in a ton of things. Like right now, she's got a show, I think it's on Hulu, called Tiny Beautiful Things that I've been meaning to watch, where she's the main character. But
never heard of that.
Of interest to us, those episodes they do with the live readings of old sitcom episodes live in front of a studio audience.
Yes. Yeah, she did one of those. I remember that now.
Not just any character, but Joe Polnicek.
Right. They did the live version of an old Facts of Life episode. And yeah, she was Joe. That's right. I saw that.
Every time I think I know everything that Katherine Hahn does, I find something new.
Yeah, there's another one of those Marvel shows going right now with the Martians, Secret Invasion.
Ah.
Yeah, it's not on the level of WandaVision.
WandaVision was amazing, though. That's a tough act to follow.
They can't all be great. They got Samuel Jackson, and he's running around with the Skrulls, you know, those shape-shifting aliens. But they could use some Katherine Hahn. The show is missing something, and I think we just figured out.
You figured out what was missing, and it was Agatha all along.
We need Katherine, and we need her puppets as well. She should bring the puppets over to the MCU.
Especially Nutso Pea Squirrely.
Yeah, let's get a squirrel, maybe even a squouse, which is a squirrel-mouse hybrid. They could use those in Marvel.
Nutso Pea Squousey.
All right, good plan. Happy birthday, Katherine. And we're just creeping around all through the 80s for these 10 episodes. This is episode 584. So we've landed in the year 1984. We've just been looking back year by year through the 80s.
Like we do.
Like we sort of do all the time around
right
here. Anyway. Well, I think you can go first this week for a change, because your plan for this is TV commercials. You've been selecting a TV commercial from each year of the 80s, and you got one for 84.
Yeah, you want to know what commercial from the 80s inspired me to do this whole segment through the 80s?
This is the one.
This is the one. And it is a commercial that I will never be able to get out of my head. I feel like all these years later, I can say that. It is a permanent fixture in my head. It is the hefty, 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 wimpy, wimpy, wimpy commercials.
Hefty trash bags.
Hefty garbage bags.
I remember this one. Absolutely. I think everybody does.
Do you remember? Maybe, no, this was probably just the weird kids that I went to school with in Londonderry, New Hampshire growing up. Kids running around the playground talking about garbage bags, like talking about garbage bag commercials. They would, they'd run around, you make a muscle, right, with your shirt, and then you'd hold it up and pretend you got a muscle under there and go, hefty, 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 and then you pull on the bottom of your shirt and you go, wimpy, wimpy, wimpy. See, these are the kids that I grew up around, Kevin, which I think explains a lot.
Yeah, I think down here in Massachusetts, we found other ways to entertain ourselves. We didn't quite stoop to that level. These were the trash bag wars of the 80s, right? We had Tom Bosley from Happy Days over there at Glad pushing the Glad trash bags.
Glad bags. Yes.
And then we had Hefty. They didn't have Bosley. They didn't have that kind of star power, Mr. Cunningham from Happy Days.
But you saw this commercial. They had an ape.
Was that an orangutan, I think?
It might have been an orangutan. I'm terrible with...
It's real quick. Like, for 2 seconds, there's an orangutan holding up a bag of trash.
And did you see where he's working?
No. Where was he working?
He is working...
Or she.
Well, yeah, it's true. I can't tell.
I think that was a lady ape.
Could have been a lady ape. But she was working at a stand called Wimpy Banana Company.
Oh, see, I missed that. It's so quick.
Yeah.
I mean, look what they did. They booked an orangutan for their trash bag commercial, and then it got trimmed down in the final edit to blink, and you'll miss the ape, which is really the best part of the commercial.
And also, this commercial continues a trend that I keep seeing popping up, putting twins in commercials just because you could. Like, I think in the 80s, we were just obsessed with twins.
There were more twins in this one? I missed the twins.
Yeah, it's toward the beginning. And they're not even having one twin hold up the wimpy trash bag and one twin hold up the hefty trash bag.
Sure.
They were just, like, so excited to get twins on that they just threw them in.
Was it the Seagal twins from Double Trouble? Probably not.
I don't know. Because, again, they show it just really, really fast.
It's also, I've got to go back and watch this like 8 more times. I've got to slow it down frame by frame like the Zapruder film. We really have to get into the details of this thing.
I already did that, and I will tell you it's totally worth your time.
Okay, I'll do that. I'm going to carve out a few hours tomorrow and just really give this the time that it deserves.
But I will warn you, the song from the commercial will get stuck in your head to the point where you'll hear the music.
Oh, that happened like 38 years ago.
But it was this goofy commercial with the Wimpy Banana Company that made me feel like I need to talk to our Flopcast listeners about commercials in the 80s. So thanks, Hefty. This commercial, by the way, inspired me so much that 1 year for my Halloween costume, I dressed up as a Hefty bag.
Did you really?
I did.
Okay. I feel like you've told me this before and I blocked it out, but now we're back at Cornflake is a trash bag.
Walking around the neighborhood, dressed like a trash bag.
Yeah.
Trick or treating.
Also, we should point out it was February.
It was.
Yeah. This also brought back a lot of memories for me. The wimpy trash bags, because they show the hefty bags, which can stand up to let a monkey throw it around the room. It's fine. And then, but then there were all the wimpy bags were all shredded and torn, and there's trash spilling everywhere. And those are the trash bags I grew up with.
Oh, no.
Well, for one thing, it was hard to even tie a trash bag back in the day.
Yeah, not all trash bags had drawstrings. In fact, most didn't.
No, the bags today, it's the drawstrings or the flaps, you know, and that's all Tom Bosley should get full credit for that. I remember Bosley being on the cutting edge of trash bag technology, screaming about, here's your Glad trash bags with their flaps or your handle ties, whatever. But your standard trash bags back then, it was just a flat surface at the top, and you had to somehow try to tie it up and then put a twist tie on it.
Yeah, and you'd always lose the twist ties.
Oh, the twist tie would hold for about 4 seconds, then go popping off, and that never worked. But even worse, though, we would drag all the sacks of trash out to the end of the yard, out by the street. You leave them out for the trash guys. Trash truck would come along. Because this is old school trash pickup, right? Now they've got those robot trucks now.
Yeah.
You know, with the robot arm comes out right off the side of the truck and picks up the trash bin. The dude is in the front driving, but he doesn't have to get out, I assume. Maybe the robot's driving the truck at this point. Who knows? But back in the day, it's guys, you know, hanging off the back of the truck. Then they run out, they throw the bags in the truck. You know how trash trucks work.
Yeah.
But at my house, though, what would happen every week is neighborhood dogs would just rip all the trash bags open.
That's the worst.
I would say maybe one out of every 3 weeks this would happen. It was a regular occurrence. I somehow blame Tom Bosley personally for the whole thing. I'd be screaming Bosley the whole time.
Bosley!
Yeah. I just want an orangutan to drag my trash away for me in a hefty bag.
We'll even let it eat the whole banana.
Just drag the trash back to the banana stand. There's money in the banana stand. Everybody knows that. And there's monkeys in the banana stand. Well, that takes me back to 1984. Cornflake. So a nice job picking out a hefty trash bag commercial.
Yeah, and we've been talking garbage, so there's nowhere to go but up from here.
Let's see what we can do. I brought for you not a trash bag commercial, but I did stick in the world of TV, though, because we were kind of talking music a bit last week, and I didn't want to do music for 84, which was a massive year for music, of course.
And we've covered that in great detail.
I just read a whole book about the music of 1984.
I thought you were going to be like, I just read a whole book called 1984.
Yeah, it turns out they made a book about it. It's a weird book, all about the whole year, evidently. Written way in advance, well in advance. They wrote the book 1984. They knew what was going to happen. But I've got this book called Can't Slow Down, you know, named after the Lionel Richie album. And it's all about the music of 1984. It's pretty good. It goes into depth on the 84 music scene. Check that out if you want some 84 music information. But I was looking at TV because there's so much goofy TV in the mid-80s, of course. And what I did was I flipped through that book. Remember that book I got a little while back? I've got that book, Single Season Sitcoms of the 1980s.
Yes, this book is fascinating. An entire book of sitcom train wrecks.
These are sitcoms from the 80s that lasted one season or less. And I flipped through the book just looking for shows that started in 1984. And I picked out seven or eight of them, I think. I only got about halfway through the alphabet, and then I stopped because I thought, that's enough. Trying to keep the show short, so I cut myself off. So here's what I got. Got a few shows starting alphabetically. Most of these I remember. A couple of them I do not. But one that I do remember was a show called A.K.A. Pablo.
A.K.A. Pablo, you say.
This was a sitcom, and this got a huge push from whatever network it was on. Because I remember the ads for this running constantly. They were so excited. Everybody's got to watch A.K.A. Pablo. It was a Norman Lear produced sitcom, I think. There were six episodes, and then it was gone. But it starred Paul Rodriguez, stand-up comedian Paul Rodriguez, who was around back then. He'd done DC Cab the year before, you know, with Mr. T. Here's his sitcom, and he played sort of a version of himself, essentially. He played an aspiring stand-up comedian, but it was him and his big Mexican-American family. So he's got a million brothers and sisters, and the father doesn't want him to be a stand-up comedian, and, you know,
ay.
That's the wacky premise. There was a bird in the house also. They had a parrot named Ramon.
Talking bird.
I'm not sure if the bird talked. I hope it did. I didn't actually go back and try to watch any episodes.
Well, the show would have lasted longer if it did, I think.
Let's assume it's a talking parrot, and they give it all sorts of witty one-liners. Ramon the parrot. But that was the show anyway. It only lasted half a dozen episodes. There was one episode guest starring Bea Arthur.
Oh, wow.
In fact, in the book, they have it looks like it's an ad from TV Guide for the episode that Bea Arthur appears in. But she was playing his new press agent, and she wanted him to change his name and get a more American-sounding name. So that was the wacky premise.
High comedy.
This was, you know, a year or so before Golden Girls. You could get Bea Arthur to do anything.
You could thank her for being a friend.
A very young Mario Lopez was on the show also.
No way.
Very young. This is a few years before Saved by the Bell. So there you go. A.K.A. Pablo. Can't say I recommend it. There's a show I do not really remember. I watched the opening theme song. It sounded vaguely familiar, so maybe I saw this. But there's a show called Domestic Life. They made 10 episodes. This one stars Martin Mull. And one thing weird about this is he played a character named Martin Crane, and the series was set in Seattle. Martin Crane was the name of Frasier's father on the sitcom Frasier 10 years later, and that was also set in Seattle. So coincidentally, two different sitcoms with a guy named Martin Crane in Seattle. But this was Martin Mull, and he played a guy who was like a TV news commentator, news reporter kind of guy. But then it was also his family life, his wife, his kids, kind of generic family sitcom stuff. Tina Yothers appeared on it, was a recurring character. Young Tina Yothers from Family Ties.
Oh, wow.
Although Family Ties was already up and running at this point, so I don't know if she was...
like, lend some star power.
That's right, the star power of Tina Yothers. You'd think that's enough to guarantee you a hit show.
Undeniable. All the kids were crazy about Tina Yothers.
The Yothers fans are going to follow her wherever she goes to this day.
There's no others, just Yothers.
That's what the promo should have been for Domestic Life. The station manager of the TV station where he worked was played by Hoyt Axton, who was like a big, goofy country music guy. I've seen Hoyt Axton recently, actually, because we've been suffering through the final couple of seasons of Different Strokes.
Oh, where it really went off the rails.
Oh, man, it sure did. But that little kid that they take in at the end, like they brought in that new little redhead kid that everybody hated.
Mm-hmm.
And his father was played by the same guy, Hoyt Axton. He'd come on once in a while and sing a country song, and it was a problem. But there he was on Domestic Life, also with Martin Mull. And a little more star power, in fact, is that Steve Martin, who worked with Martin Mull, I think even back in the 70s, they used to do an act together called Steve Martin Mull. And Steve Martin was an executive producer on this show and also did some writing on it. So it couldn't have been that bad if Steve Martin was involved.
Yeah.
And even, you know, Martin Mull has generally been involved in quality stuff over the years. But this one...
TGI Friday commercials, right?
Did he do TGI Friday commercials? I don't know.
I think he did.
That could be. I don't know that.
Don't quote me.
Too late. You've been quoted.
Well, I have become something of an authority on commercials, but only from the 80s. So
that's true. Well, that's Domestic Life anyway. I watched the opening credits for an episode on YouTube. That's as far as I got with Domestic Life. Can't say I particularly recommend it, but who knows? There was a show called Dreams.
That is... I have no idea what that would be.
I never watched this show, although I'm aware of it. I've heard about it over the years. Show called Dreams. They made 12 episodes. Only 5 episodes aired. This was a show about an aspiring rock band. The star of the show was John Stamos.
Whoa!
Now, this is, you know, a couple of years before Full House.
Full House, yeah.
They were putting John Stamos in all kinds of shows back then. He did several flop shows before his success on Full House. But this was John Stamos. And Jamie Gertz was also in this. We love Jamie Gertz from Square Pegs and Facts of Life and Lost Boys and a billion other things. These days, I like to point out, these days, Jamie Gertz owns the Atlanta Hawks in the NBA.
Yes.
So she's doing quite well. But Jamie was on the show as well. So it's a sitcom, but they would cut to sort of music video style segments. And there was a lot of breakdancing in it, even in the opening theme song, you'd see breakdancing.
So when they cut away to music videos, do you think they were inspired by Kid Video?
Yes, clearly inspired by Kid Video. I would say probably Dreams and Kid Video were both inspired by the fact that music video was just so big at this point. You know, TV shows were trying to figure out ways to cash in on the music video trend.
I loved that when a television show would shoehorn in a music video.
Absolutely. So Kid Video, they were like, let's mix music videos with a Saturday morning cartoon. And in this case, it was, let's mix music videos with a sitcom. Interestingly, when I was YouTubing Dreams earlier today, one song that they did, you can watch the Dreams sitcom music video for this song. A year or so before Heart did it, Dreams did Alone, the song Alone.
Oh.
Yeah, you can watch the Dreams version of Alone with a girl, not Jamie Gertz, but the other girl in the band sings it, as well as John Stamos sings part of it. It's astonishing.
How did this show not make it?
I didn't know this existed. But then, of course, a year or so later, that song ended up with Heart. And they did okay with it.
I just This show has all the makings of a hit. I don't understand.
And then we also want to remind everybody, while you're on YouTube watching Alone by Dreams, also look up Alone by our friends Anaria, you know, symphonic metal band. Yes. Anaria with our friends Jessica and Sergio. They do a cover of Alone by Heart, and you can watch the video, and it's wonderful. Look that up as well. I know one other weird thing about dreams.
All right.
This may or may not be correct. I heard this sometime back. This could be apocryphal, but the way I heard it, when they were putting the show together, there was already a band out there called Dreams, just like a real band out in the world, a Boston band, in fact.
Oh.
And the TV people went to this band and paid them to change their name.
Wow.
Because they wanted the TV Dreams to be the only band called Dreams. So they offered a pretty substantial amount of money to this just totally unknown band in Boston. Could you guys come up with a new name so that we can use Dreams? The band agreed, took the money, and changed their name. And since they used to be called Dreams, they changed their name to X-Dream or Extreme.
Whoa!
You know, more than words, extreme.
Oh, I know extreme.
You know extreme. That's how I heard the story. Is that true? I don't know. But, you know, let's say it is.
I definitely want it to be true.
Let's say it's true. Print the legend, you know?
That would explain how they could afford all the, like, quality studio time.
And that would explain everything.
They seemed like they were in really good, like, they were not a struggling rock band at all.
Yeah, they owe it all to Stamos and Jamie Gertz. Let's move along to the Duck Factory.
How can you fail with a show called the Duck Factory?
Do you remember the Duck Factory? We must have talked about the Duck Factory at some point.
If we did, I have blacked it out of my memory.
Well, this is a show I definitely watched because it was about a cartoon studio, an animation studio, where they made a show called Dippy Duck, a cartoon.
Mm.
They made 13 episodes of The Duck Factory, and the show is best remembered today because it starred a young and largely unknown Jim Carrey.
Whoa.
He was the star of the show. He was like this young dude going to work at this animation studio.
Oh, wow.
To make Dippy Duck. And then Don Messick, you know, classic Hanna-Barbera voice guy Don Messick was on the show as well. He did the voice of Dippy Duck, and then he was also live action, appeared on the show as a guy, you know, doing voices for the cartoons. Teresa Ganzel was the owner of the animation studio, who I recognized at the time. She used to be on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson all the time back then. She was very funny. Strong cast. And like Jim Carrey, we know him as like just the crazy guy, you know, that he would be in the movies a few years later. And he was kind of the straight man on this show. He was just this like the wide-eyed, innocent, young, aspiring animator.
Oh, wow. It's so weird to picture Jim Carrey that way.
Yeah, the people around him on the show were like the goofy ones. But just being such a fan of cartoons and such, I was definitely watching Duck Factory, a show I have no memory of at all. I found in this book called Empire. They made 6 episodes. And it was sort of set in the world of big business. And in the book, it says it was almost a parody of shows like Dallas and Dynasty. But a lot of people that you'd recognize were in the cast of this. It starred Patrick McNee, who people knew from The Avengers, the British TV series The Avengers back in the 60s. He was the star. Karen Kay was in it as well, who did a million things back then. The movie My Tutor, people know Karen Kay from, and a lot of TV. Richard Mazur, I would always see in everything back then. He was on One Day at a Time, bunch of stuff. Susan Rattan played a secretary on Empire, and a couple of years later, she would play a secretary on L.A. Law, so people would know her there. So a bunch of familiar faces on Empire, but I never saw this. I have no memory of that at all.
Nor do I.
But there it is. Empire. How about ER? Remember ER?
Yeah, I do.
I don't know if you do. I'm not talking about the 90s medical drama.
Oh.
I'm talking about the 1984 sitcom ER.
So that wasn't a pilot for the ER that we know from the 90s.
Not at all. This was, 6, 8 years, 10 years, something like that, before ER started. There was ER, the 80s version. This ran a full season, 22 episodes, and it was a sitcom set in a hospital emergency room. Because, you know, get ready to laugh.
Yeah, it's always a good time. in the emergency room.
Always a good time. The star was Elliot Gould. So he was a ER doctor. And Elliot Gould, I think the kids today don't realize he was a huge star. Certainly in the 70s, he was a major movie star. He was the original Hawkeye Pierce in the movie MASH and did lots of movies in the 70s. The younger kids today would probably know Elliot Gould from Friends because he played Courtney Cox's father on Friends occasionally, that guy. But Elliot Gould was there. Marcia Strassman was on ER. She was Mrs. Cotter on Welcome Back, Cotter.
Ah.
Conchita Ferrell was in this, also from L.A. Law. I knew her from L.A. Law. She was a maid, actually, on 2 and a Half Men, I think.
Oh, right. We're talking about that.
Yeah, we got a message from Blasted Bill because we forgot to include her in our Maids and Butlers shows. But very cool lady. Conchita was on the show. There was a character, a nurse, I think, in the ER, who the character was the niece of George Jefferson from the Jeffersons. They actually worked in like a tie-in to the Jeffersons. And Sherman Hemsley, as George Jefferson, actually appeared in the first episode of ER. So they're kind of connecting ER to the Jeffersons. They existed in the same TV universe.
That is very interesting.
It's weird. Like, it wasn't really a spinoff.
Right.
It didn't spin off from the Jeffersons. It was just
linked.
From day one,
yeah.
It was connected. They were like, hey, everybody, here's George Jefferson. There's a young lady named Corinne Borer. Was also one of the nurses, I think. And I knew Corinne from Joysticks. She was the Valley Girl in the movie Joysticks. A ridiculous movie. But I know Corinne from Joysticks, and she was on The Flash as well.
You need a t-shirt that says, I know Corinne from Joysticks.
Let's get that shirt and let's just set it on fire because we probably shouldn't wear that shirt. But Corinne was on The Flash in the 90s and then also on the more recent version of The Flash TV series. She's done some cool stuff. Jason Alexander from Seinfeld
right.
was on ER.
Wow.
And here's the craziest part. George Clooney. As in George Clooney from the 90s medical drama ER. He was also on the 80s sitcom ER.
Man, 80s George Clooney is just so wacky.
But isn't that bizarre? He was on two completely unrelated shows, both called ER.
That's wild. Well, I'm glad he wasn't deterred from doing the second one after the first one didn't last.
It's such a stupid name for a show, and yet they did it twice, and the same guy was on it both times.
That's so great.
There you go. Here's a weird one, too. The Four Seasons. There was a movie called The Four Seasons in the early 80s. It was Alan Alda from MASH. It was Alan Alda, Rita Moreno, Carol Burnett, a bunch of people like that. And it's this pretty ridiculous movie. It's just like a bunch of people, all these friends, and they vacation together and they just scream at each other and have arguments. And it's this ridiculous melodrama kind of thing.
That's entertainment.
The Four Seasons. Yeah. They made a TV show out of it a couple of years later. So we have The Four Seasons, 13 episodes. I remember watching the first episode of this because Alan Alda was actually in the first episode. And then that was it. Then he was gone after that. But, Tony Roberts was in it, who people would know from Annie Hall, a bunch of movies like that. Joanna Kearns was on this. She was the mom on Growing Pains a couple of years later.
Oh, yeah.
Joanna was there. Alan Arbus was in this, also from MASH, along with Alan Alda. Alan Arbus played the psychiatrist, Sidney Friedman. So, again, some star power in this thing. Not a great show, as I recall. I don't think I made it past episode one.
Everyone just watched for Alan Alda and then bailed.
Yeah, we all bailed out at the same time Alan Alda did. And I've got one more, Cornflake, one more show I noted from 1984 from our single season sitcoms of the 80s book, and this is one that I loved. I was a big fan back then of It's Your Move, which lasted almost the full season, 18 episodes. This was the show that they gave Jason Bateman.
Oh.
They pulled him off of Silver Spoons because, you know, he was like the Eddie Haskell type friend of Ricky Schroeder, and he was so funny. He was like the breakout star in Silver Spoons, so they gave him his own show. It's Your Move, where again, they wanted him to play sort of a scheming Weasley character again, but now he's the star. It was Jason Bateman. He had a sister who I later realized was she was the girl in Bad News Bears, the TV version. She played Tatum O'Neill's character from the movie in the TV version of Bad News Bears. That was the sister on It's Your Move. And so it's them and their mother. The mother was played by Karen Kay, who I mentioned a few minutes ago because she was also on that show Empire. I also noted that in this book, in the Empire listing, the writer makes a point of just calling her the lovely Karen Kay. Then in the It's Your Move entry, he calls her pretty Karen Kay.
Aww.
So the writer of the single season book, evidently a big fan of Karen Kay, as we all were back then.
Yeah.
If anybody remembers the movie My Tutor, that's Karen Kay. She's the tutor. But she was Jason Bateman's mother. And then the wacky premise was that he was always running scams and playing tricks and stuff. But then this new guy moves into their apartment building and starts dating the mother. And Jason Bateman didn't like this guy. So
hilarity ensues.
Yeah, they were kind of jousting and trying to outwit each other. Jason Bateman and this new dude in the building, played by David Garrison, who I think people knew from Married with Children later on. It was a cool show. It was a fun show. And they kind of watered it down as it went along. They were getting pressure that people thought Jason Bateman was too scheming and nasty a character, and they needed to reel that part in. So they kind of destroyed the whole premise of the show as it went along.
Oh.
Trying to lessen his scheming ways.
So the TV show imploded.
Yeah.
Well, that's a shame.
But it was good while it lasted.
I'm glad you got your fill.
Did I, though?
You've been waiting for season two all these years, haven't you?
We should be on like season 40 by now, right? Why did they ever have to stop? The episode that's absolutely unforgettable is they invented a rock band that didn't really exist. Like there was a fake rock band that they got booked to play a big concert. And the actual band was Jason Bateman's nerdy friend Eli was controlling all these life-size puppets from backstage. With like skeleton masks.
That is.
It was freaky. It was actually a life-size band of puppets, and they were fooling people into thinking it was a real rock band called The Dregs of Humanity.
Wow.
Look that up, everybody.
Now I'm kind of mad that that band is fake. I want it to be real.
Yeah, they were really good. It was a really good band. Shockingly, Dregs of Humanity was completely left out of that book I just read, Can't Slow Down, about the music of 1984, despite being, for my money, the most important band of 1984.
Well, evidently they weren't lovely.
So that's going through the first half of the alphabet anyway, approximately, Cornflake. Those are your single season sitcoms of the 80s, according to this book. Those are the ones that I noticed today.
Oh, treasures.
Yeah. Look at all the fun we had flipping around the stupid TV in 84. There you go.
Well, thank you for adding some TV shows to my commercial.
Do you wish we could go back? Was that better? Was the TV of 1984 better than what we have today? Be honest. We had these shows and we had trash bag commercials, and that's it.
Yeah, you couldn't pay me to go back.
I think you might be right about that. So, you know, let's just quit while we're ahead then. Let's just stop right now. Just get us out of here.
We gotta stop. But the beat goes on at flopcast.net or on facebook.com/flopcast. We're also on Mastodon, universodon.com/@flopcast, and on Instagram, the_flopcast. And we have a request. If you go on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and or review, it will make the Kevin and the Cornflake very happy. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
And if any TV producers out there want to make a TV show about another band called the Sponge Awareness Foundation, if you want to buy that name from us, yeah, let's do business. We will, I'd say $14 would be appropriate.
I think you need to be played by George Clooney.
And it's, oh yeah, Clooney's going to be in the band. And yeah, send us $14. The name is all yours. Cornflake, thanks for going back to 1984. Everybody, next week, we will stomp right on to 1985. Meanwhile, please be safe, be kind, be silly. And we'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
Hey, Hi, this is Jim Adams from Monster Attack, inviting you to join us every Monday night at 5 o'clock for an all-new episode of Monster Attack. For the last 7 years, we've been talking about these wonderful movies that we grew up with as monster kids. So join us every Monday at 5 p.m. right here on the ESO Network.
Okay, Cornflake, it's the secret after show. Nobody's listening. Say whatever you want.
Oh, I got to tell our secret after show listeners that I was at the beach this weekend.
Yeah.
And I saw Santa Claus.
Oh, really?
Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus.
Wow.
Together at the beach, decked out.
This is a Christmas in July kind of thing happening?
I suppose so, but you would expect to see them, right, in the Santa suit and the matching duds.
Yeah, but not in this case. They're just completely naked.
Nothing but candy cane stripes on those two. Santa had one of those really old-timey...
The super old-timey swim trunks like Bugs Bunny would wear?
Exactly. And wow. But Mrs. Claus was a little more modern. When she turned around, it was really cool. She had a tattoo on the back of her neck. Yeah. I knew that Mrs. Claus was bad. Now I know.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.